Blog Talk Radio.
Priestess and the Cauldron, a podcast featuring Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, two out-of-the-broom-closet professional witches with over 70 years combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC Radio Network. During each show, Elvira and Phoenix will help you create rituals, make spells, make potions, and much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long ago cultures and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Phoenix, take it away.
Take it away.
I know. I love that. Every time I hear that, I honestly think of, you know, taking it down the road, going down the road and just, you know, talking as we walk and talk. I don't know. My brain is in a different place today. So here we are. We are on another trip. How was your week? I'm going to just jump in.
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah, my week's been just kind of blah. I've not accomplished very much. I think I mentioned last week I got the edits back on my book and I was taking some time, quote unquote, off to just focus on that, you know. But my day job, the shop, is not I can't really take a break from that job. Like, I cannot be on the floor dealing with customers, but I'm still the main buyer. I'm still the main pricer. I do all of that stuff. So I do all the reporting and the, you know, sending things to the bookkeeper and payroll. Like, I do all of those things. So I can't really take that time off. And what I've noticed is when I'm procrastinating, I do all the busy work for my quote unquote day job, you know. So I'll be like, okay, I need to dig into these edits. How about I update my spreadsheet? How about I order some jewelry? How about we need books? I'll go, because, you know, I'm going to admit it. Like, I got a lot of Venus in my chart. I like buying stuff. And so having a retail business really fulfills some of my shop need, you know, my purchasing need. I can go and I spent hours. We've expanded our book selection at the shop and I rearranged some things last month. So to keep a lot more books in stock because I've expanded our book collection. And I've had so much fun scrolling through different, like, esoteric publishers. Like, ooh, this book sounds good. Maybe I'll order an extra one for myself. Ooh, this book sounds good. Oh, my God, it's been really good and really distracting. And then this week, even that motivation came to a grinding halt, and I didn't do much. I watched, there's a show on Netflix called The Order, which is, like, college magical werewolves, witches. I love it. And I basically watched two seasons of that this week. That's what I've done. That's what I've accomplished. So on one hand, I'm recognizing I probably needed a bit of a pause and I needed, like, my mental health needed a break. And I'm beating myself up because that's what I do for not doing more. That's basically it, like giving myself permission and beating myself up all at the same time.
That's, you know, the duality. That's duality.
Yeah. Yeah. How are you? Yeah. How's your week?
Well, it's part of, you know, duality is, you know, life and death. And it seems that my particular week started out, well, the weekend was really good and I got a lot accomplished. And as I have been saying, I'm packing my house up. So I did some major things with, you know, packing some things up and paring stuff down. And, you know, there's no way I'm going to totally make this look like I don't live here. I can't stage it like a generic house. There's no possible way, but I have certainly started making it look like an artisan lives here. So rather than a artisan witch lives here, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
So, but in the process, the week, the actual work week began with my daughter calling me, and I had to call her back because I was engaged at the time she called, to find out that someone that she knows next door to them where they live, they have their house, they bought their house, actually 5 years after they had rented a house across the street from where they're living, and this neighbor has been their neighbor for all of that 10 years, and so the husband and wife, and the wife got COVID, and she proceeded to start to heal from it, and unfortunately, I guess like Monday morning early, she succumbed. She couldn't breathe, and then, of course, the paramedics came out, and it wasn't, she didn't make it, and my daughter was devastated.
Mm-hmm.
And it is,
terrible.
It's, you know, and you know, this is not the first death that she has dealt with in the last month of people she's known, and they're older people, because, you know, my daughter's like me. We have a tendency to be around older people. We gravitate. It's not that we don't have our own age brackets, but somehow that's the way we function. And
yeah,
the gentleman that passed away earlier in, you know, a month, was probably the end of last month, was a gentleman they had known also in that area, and he had moved away with his wife. And, you know, he had several illnesses and succumbed to one of them, and she couldn't see him before he passed. Whereas her neighbor next door, she actually, you know, from a distance or whatever, she could see because, you know, they've got, like, a huge property, so they can wave from their porches if choose to. But unfortunately, that, you know, came up on her world. And I live in a senior park, so if you think that senior facilities, parks, apartments, living structures, whatever you want to put us in, it's senior. So you know, mm-hmm. there's a grouping. Well, the gentleman that lives next door to me turned 90 last year and has been very spry in many ways and very alert, and you know, he was having a hard time walking, but he had an emergency intestinal surgery, and he obviously, there were other things that came up. Unfortunately, Wednesday I dropped his paper off at his porch door and I couldn't get a hold of him, and so I had it, you know, he leaves his door open when he wakes up, so he was obviously up. And I found that I didn't find his body, but I knew that his body was sitting in front of the bedroom door because I couldn't open it. And
that's
so
hard.
I found out he had, you know, he passed of a heart attack. And, you know, so that affected me. And there was a lot of, you know, so there's been like life death process. The, you know, closing down my home and my shrines and my you know, thing is a death process as well. So I think it's kind of the same thing. And, of course, I think every one of us is feeling we're tired. We're all tired of the intensity,
yeah.
the high, you know, high profile of everything, you know,
absolutely.
Double mask and, you know, do this and you know, all this stuff. And,
yeah,
it's wearing.
It's,
so I can
see
why.
Sure, wearing. I've seen a lot of people comment like that they feel like they've hit another wall, or they're feeling really low, or they're just, it's, there's something about this particular moment that's a little bit like we're feeling worn down, which makes sense.
Yeah,
it's been rough.
Well, it's been rough, and but all in all, I mean, it for my week, it's been going over things. Like I pulled some books out of my bookcase, and I'm going through my books, packing them, and I found I'm in a volume of Who's Who in America, and I had gotten one of them, and it was way back, and I was like, oh my God, I didn't realize, I forgot about it, or some of like my mother's handwritten recipe book, which looks kind of beat up, and since I don't cook but my brother does, I want to give it to him, so I'm connecting with him to send it to him. And so some things were are very enlightening, and other things are just drudging, like I got to go to the grocery store, I got to go do this, that kind of stuff. So and, even today I get to have my, because I'm on Medicare, we have to have wellness exams. And I didn't want to go in. They gave me a choice. I said, I don't want to go into the wellness exam based on everything going on. So you were doing a video wellness check, which I find really kind of amusing because, of course, I had to take my weight. I'll have to take my temperature, and a friend of mine has she's a nurse. She has a blood pressure cup, so I'm going to have to take my blood pressure. And then I'm going to sit in front of this, but I was trying to get everything up and running last night, and of course, Mercury retrograde was perfect. It all went to shit in the handbasket, And I went through, I tried my phone, I tried my tablet, I have a laptop, so it's my laptop. Everything else kept saying, this is not supporting the system. And I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? I put everything, all the necessary things are installed. And I'm like, so that's been my week, finalizing in trying to do this task that I know in Mercury retrograde is going to be hard anyway. And it, it wasn't like I predetermined it. It was just like, okay, computer glitches. Yeah, that's it.
So. Sounds about right.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? So, and on that, we need to jump into our topic for today, which I find interesting. I knew we were going to do, the brother-sister thing of Artemis was last week, and of course, we're doing Apollo. And I have mixed feelings about Apollo, but I will let you. Yeah, I do. I'm kind of,
I want to hear that.
And it's funny because you just told me before that you really kind of like the guy, and I'm like going, okay.
Yeah. Well, so I feel like I have to preface that. So I may have talked about this on other shows. I don't know. I can't remember what I say anymore. I just have to pretend like every time I say something, it's new.
There you go. I like that idea.
But I started practicing witchcraft and paganism as a teenager, and back then in the 90s, a lot of the books that were available, because, the internet didn't really exist yet, at least not in my world, there was this idea somehow that you had to have a patron and a patroness, and you were supposed to narrow it down to one god and one goddess. And I was never really able to do that. And I did narrow it down to one goddess who sort of was like my entryway goddess into more practicing. But it wasn't for many, many years that I started to really maybe even define myself as a polytheist, where I work with many gods. And it wasn't for many, 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 many years that I worked with male deity in any way, shape, or form. For me, a lot what was appealing about witchcraft and paganism was the feminine power. I was interested in the goddess, any goddess. I didn't care about male deity because I felt like our world was already so invested in male deity in the form of the Christian God, he gets enough energy for all the gods in the world. So I wasn't into it. And And it was a really long time, like not even 10 years before ago, like that I started working with male deity and the first real male god who came into my life and sort of changed things is uber masculine Thor. And now Dionysus, although I don't really consider Dionysus to be a male deity, he's queer and gender fluid and something very feminine in his masculinity. So, so I didn't have the opportunity really because I was so disinterested in any male gods that I didn't even attempt to learn about many of them. So in doing the research, of course, I know a little bit about Apollo. I've read about Apollo. I know about him because of Artemis.
There you go.
You know, the episode we did last week. But this, you know, getting ready for this show, I did a lot more research and I was like, whoa, he's like the god of all the things I'm most interested in. How fascinating. So I'm curious about what it is that feels complicated because I'm like, it's a whole new world for me.
Well, you know, I guess I found it fascinating. Because, of course, you know, Apollo, the first thing they want to say is the sun god. And he's really the god of light or brilliance. It's not it's not sun because Helios in the Greek pantheon is sun.
Yeah.
So
they tried to supplant Helios with Apollo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it kind of fell flat on its face, no pun intended.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the thing, as I was reading, is that it became to me when, like, he took over the aspects, obviously, of Artemis. He took over the aspects of a lot of goddesses, and of course, you know, the goddess energy, the mother energy, the whole dynamic of energy. But I found the fact that he is that. His particular energy became one with the oracles, but this, and I'm gonna quote this because really it was one of those where I went, oh my God, that is happening, and it's the reverse of what's happening now, but it's been what's happening, and it's from the Woman's Encyclopedia of Myth and Secrets by Barbara G. Walker. Now, as you were saying about starting your quest with the goddess and the feminine energy. I, too, obviously started way back, but during that time of that blossoming. But her statement here about the Apolloian priests naturally directed their energies toward conquest of the oracles. And it's, quote, the reason why a deity associated with political conquest and order should take possession of oracular shrines is obvious. Oracles were the chief means of controlling public opinion and public action, and to control the oracles was as necessary to a political god as it is to later politicians to control the press or education, unquote. And I went, aha. Now, maybe it's because that is playing out right now in our United States, but specifically the world and, you know, meaning in general the world, but specifically the United States. Is the idea that a male-dominated point of reference takes over the feminine, but subservient. She becomes subservient to his needs, the needs. And then what happens is it's through that control, they control the rest of everybody. And the Christian churches did the exact same thing when they basically, which I thought was even funnier, took control of Apollo and made him... Basically, he became a junior, quote, large G god, unquote, because he basically he sought interventions in illness, healing miracles. Right. You know, these were part of his, you know, Apollo's side of the world. But they eventually did this. They gave him the title of Benedictus, good speaker, and he was eventually canonized and became Saint Benedict. So, I mean, I was like, I think it's because Apollo started out as taking over things that instead of doing it as a brother-sister process, he basically just took everything over. And yes, that is the patriarchal consciousness of what was happening in the world. So the god represented, he represented the people that were doing it. It wasn't him, because going back, I'm sure, to the more ancient traditional god that would be considered an Apollo, he probably wasn't. He was much more fluid. He was much more open and worked with the goddess, because she basically, from what I've been reading, is that, you know, he was her counterpart, but also worked with her, and she was the guiding force. See, and that totally changed. So, I mean, I'm not angry at Apollo. I just find that what was done, and the deity itself that changed the dynamics, then proceeded to play all the games that the other gods and the male gods did with all the other female goddesses. And this was a brother and sister, and they were supposed to be the balance, because as twins, usually it's light and dark of, you know, a particular thing. These became the male-female, and it was never done as a negative. That was not what started. So anyway, that's my rant. I'll shut up.
No, I totally appreciate that. And if you look at it, like if you can take it a step backwards almost, and, you know, divorce it from Greek culture, which is impossible to do, but, you know, the this concept of twins, of male and female, and what we in our modern culture consider more masculine and more feminine energies, they almost are reversed, you know, where Artemis is like the huntress and wild and refuses to settle down. And it has all of this very, what are in our modern United States, at least, thinking that seems like very masculine things, where Apollo is like interested in art and culture and music and dancing, right? Those are quote unquote more feminine things in our modern culture and awareness and whatever. So, you know, there is this interesting balance of these twins, where the subjects that they get, you know, credit over or whatever, don't necessarily match our modern ideas of what are more masculine or feminine, to be binary, because, you know, that we are talking about a very binary concept here. It's much more complicated than that, of course, but, you know, for this, at least, you know, you can kind of see that those polarities coming out to play. So, yeah, and I also think there is this interesting way of, you know, when things were written down, right? Because all of these stories and gods existed before things got written down. And once they started to get written down, culture started to shift and change. The Titans getting locked up by Zeus and being controlled by Zeus reflects a huge cultural change in that part of the world, where humans went from more of a agrarian, natural worshiping of the elements to the sky father and his cronies, who were now in charge, quote unquote, you know. And you can see this reflected in the relationship between Zeus and Apollo, where Apollo, upon birth, decides he's going to bring Zeus's wisdom to the people. He wants to be a god for the people. And Zeus manipulates that a lot. Zeus totally manipulates that a lot. And in some stories, you can see how Apollo attempts to shift that, break that, slow it down, maybe not just be the good son who follows all the rules. You know, there's a little bit of that. So maybe I'm just looking at it all with rose-colored glasses, but, you know, it seems like a lot of that cultural influence comes from Zeus. And I like to make Zeus the bad guy. That's kind of what I do. So,
well, he kind of led the charge, shall we say?
Right.
But you know, interesting is that yes, he is the god of prophecy, music, medicine, was it magic, the arts, spirituality, the woodlands. but justified revenge or justified, a justified retaliation. And that's the one thing he actually, and I think you're talking about, Zeus, I think you probably got that right, because basically Apollo decided to, shall we say, does this sound familiar? Pardon Orestes for killing his mother, and because she had been bad. And so, of course, because she had been bad, he had to kill her, and that was okay. And
that
my
was
whole
okay.
being, and that was okay. So my whole being was kind of taken back by the fact that he did this and suddenly came from all of this other stuff, but then they kind of sheltered it. And I think it came from the same ideas that if, you know, you, first of all, he wanted the tolerance as a god. He wanted tolerance for his followers. He wanted tolerance that his followers have tolerance. And if you think of that, but then, you know, if you do something bad, then you get punished, kind of a thing. I think Zeus had some major hand in that, shall we say, to change it.
Yeah, totally. And I think that, from a bigger picture too, shows more cultural information and how there was this shift in Greek, ancient Greek culture to more patriarchal, more hierarchical, more focused power, you know? And so I've said this before and I joke about it all the time when I do classes about the gods, but you know, all the writings of the Greek gods were not necessarily written down by the gods, you know, like many people believe that the Christian Bible is God's words, right? That's not true in the Greek system. The Greek stories are basically fan fiction that were written down by writers of the time. And we take them as what everyone believes, but it was like this popular soap opera. It was fan fiction. It was, but we've taken like, Homer, you know, we take Homer's words and we're like, oh, this is what Greek myth is. Well, we don't know that. It's just because it's written down that we're going to believe it, you know? So I think it's also super important when getting involved with any deity, of course, do the reading, of course, learn the mythology, of course, do all of those things, but also use discernment. The witch's most important tool, in my opinion, is discernment, and have a personal relationship and see what of what you have read feels like the person or the entity you're engaging with, what of what you have read feels like it's truth. You're allowed to have your own opinion, you know, and also look at modern egregore, which in my opinion is also a really big deal. What are modern practitioners saying and doing and practicing with that deity? Because that's going to influence their energy and who they evolve. I think the gods evolve. So, you know, who is Apollo now compared to who was Apollo then could be different. So, you know, I also like Apollo because he's got, he's queer, you know, he's got lovers of all gender, and I like that. And I think that was very commonplace in Greece, but it's been written out quite a bit.
Well, that's true. That's true, because obviously if you're going to start utilizing these same concepts and, you know, taking them into Christianity, you're going to have to change their way of looking at it. So, you know, they either, you know, they're celibate, they're this, they're the other thing. They've, you know, because that was what I was going to bring up, is that, you know, he loved maids and boys. He didn't, you know, it was like affairs always ended unhappily. But, you know, he kind of wound up either way anyway. Didn't matter. It was kind of like, okay, that's cool. But, I mean, he's the father of Asclepius, the god of medicine. You know, there's so many things that as a god, he was very much part of. So there's this other side that I think gets, you know, just like I said, there is this other side that gets manipulated to be a little bit more used by, again, the higher god, Zeus, to take on what he wanted. So, as I said, I think it's because there's so much, you know, in a myth and a god that you see I'm watching having just happened in our, you know, in the United States. I just, you know, my brain is just like going, can you see how, I mean, how someone could be thought of as the second coming, you know, because that's what controls the people. And, you know, when, I personally think when Apollo started or Artemis started, you know, the energies of it, I honestly feel it was a co-creative process. They might have had the priests or priestesses as intermediaries, but not to the point where they were the only ones. It was just you know, and because of that, you could have this fluid reference with that particular energy, that deity. And now it's just, you know, it's you get people to do what you want them to do because you suddenly promote whatever it is you're promoting. And I think Apollo got used just as much as a lot of the other deities got used for that basis.
Absolutely.
So anyhow, yeah, and he's basically, he's a pastoral god. You know, he cared for the herds of, you know, the herds and flocks and, you know, that kind of thing. So I think he had the lyre, which I didn't, you know, I'd forgotten that he had the lyre, you know, the musical instrument, the harp, the lyre.
Yeah, that's pretty much the only thing I remembered about him before doing my research this week, that he was connected to music, he invented the lyre, and he was the brother of Artemis. That was it.
See, and I kind of was on the other side with, he was, you know, the sun deity or god of, you know, that energy, and he was, you know, into Delphi and the oracles, and, you know, he killed off the serpent, Hera's serpent, who was tormenting his mother Leto, so he became, you know, involved with that whole thing. So it was kind of like, that's where I wound up, and it's not even because of my delving into this in a spiritual way. This is what I remember from, you know, learning the mythology in school. Why don't we take our little break, which will be very little, but it'll be little, and then we'll come back and I will let you babble, because I think I've kind of angled enough.
Well,
of
that's
it.
What we do here. Fine.
So go for it, dear. We'll go for it.
All right. We'll be back in a moment.
More magic is coming your way right after these messages. The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ollie, Sundays 3 to 4:30. The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, Tuesdays 5 to 6. The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, Fridays 1 to 2. And Blue Flag Root Radio with Lady Muse, Fridays 7 to 8. All times specific, add 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com.
That was fun.
I know. We're just like, hi, we're back. We bounced in. We bounced out. I love it. Okay, go for it, darling.
Okay.
What's going on with Apollo and you?
I thought I would share the birth story, which I shared half of it last week when we talked about Artemis, right? We talked about they were born a day apart, blah, blah, blah. But I thought I'd go into a little more detail this time. So Apollo and Artemis are the children of Zeus, which in so many places I've read, Zeus is the king of gods, and it just makes me want to vomit because that's not true, and I hate that it's phrased that way, but whatever. Their mother is Leto, or Leto, or however that might be pronounced appropriately, who is one of his many mistresses. And of course, because Hera is always the demon or demonized in these stories, when Hera discovers that Leto is pregnant, she's so pissed off, she wrongly focuses all of her anger on Leto instead of on Zeus, because, you know, whatever. And she creates a rule. She puts basically a curse on Leto and says that she can't give birth on terra firma. She can't give birth anywhere on Earth. So that's problematic. Where else are you going to give birth if you can't give birth on the land? So Leto tries to go to many places, and every time she tries, it doesn't work out. But the voice of Apollo from within her womb tells her about this floating island called Delos. And Delos is an island that is not attached to the earth. It is literally a floating island. And so Leto goes there, and that is where she labors and gives birth. And first she gives birth to Artemis. On the sixth day of the week, she gives birth to Artemis. And Artemis is born and immediately sees that her mother is in distress and helps her mother labor and give birth to her twin brother Apollo on the seventh day. And when Apollo is born, he is carrying a sword, which is problematic if you're giving birth to a person holding a sword. But his sword is golden, and as soon as he is born, everything on the island of Delos turns also to gold. Swans appear and circle the island seven times. He is so beautiful that the nymphs around them begin to sing in delight. He is washed by goddesses who attended to Leto. That was the other thing that Hera did. Aletheia, who is the main healer goddess of the Olympians, Hera steals her away so she can't help give birth, right? So that's why Apollo's sister had to step in and help, because there was no midwife because of Hera. But Apollo decides during his birth, the island of Delos becomes fixed. It now has a connection to Earth. It's no longer a floating island. And ever since then, the island of Delos has been dedicated to the god Apollo. And I really like that story. I like the story of their birth from both of their perspectives. But I just find it really delightful. And he's connected to swans. That's like one of his many symbols and signs, is the swan and the lyre, as we said, and all that fun stuff. But also, whenever we've talked about Greek gods, I talk about, let me pause that. He's also, as you mentioned, the healer, and he's the god of plagues, which is interesting to have come up. I didn't realize that he was connected to plagues, because pretty much any deity that is connected to healing is also connected to illness. They have to, you know, it's two sides of the same coin. And so we see that, and where his twin is connected to childbirth and labor and babies, he's connected to young children, like the next stage of life, and coming from childhood and stepping into manhood, like that really kind of awkward moment there, and more so for boys than for girls. But what I was going to say is, you know how the Greeks love their epithets and how every god has a million epithets? Apollo has more than any other. Like, he has so many epithets, we couldn't even like talk about all of them in the show. There are so many of them. And I think that's just a sign, as like we were talking about, he really did become a god of the people, and he really did become this symbol of law and order and rules, and was this, you know, voice of Zeus. And so we can see how his energy could have been manipulated. By people in charge, by the men in charge, because let's be real, who was in charge of Greek society from a governmental standpoint? That was the dudes. You know, but it's interesting. So many epithets.
Wow. Yeah, I know. Comes, as you say, that intense number of epithets is basically like, okay, he's everything, he's anything and everything to anyone and everyone.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah, and one thing I noticed in some of the writings about him is the epithets for many of the other gods are like, oh, this god's connected to this thing, and here's the epithet for it. But for him, they're categorized, like all these epithets are about the sun. All these epithets are about childhood. All these epithets are about music. So it's like there's so many of them, they had to categorize them.
Right, right. Isn't that interesting? Yes, it's he definitely has his own sense of what he does and where he goes with the process. And people, I just, you know, reading about all the different lovers and what happened to them, you know, they get turned to cypress trees or laurel trees or, you know, whatever. It's kind of like the dude is never going to have one person. He had everybody. So it kind of presents it with why he's the god of, more the god of the common man, so to speak, or woman.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And the other, you know, he was so beautiful when he was born, right? Like we mentioned that a minute ago. And also, many of his offspring, his kids, were considered to be very beautiful and very skilled and talented. You know, a lot of his kids are connected to music and art and more of these creative pursuits, you know, where you might see, like, many times the children of a god will be connected to all sorts of things. It's kind of an interesting specialty that his kids are so much focused on the arts. And I find that really interesting. He's also the patron of sailors, which I find weird.
Yeah.
I think it's the reason he's connected to sailors, I think, is because in the story of Jason and the Argonauts, Jason prays to his patron, who happens to be Apollo, to help them when they're lost and they're in a storm. So it's I think that's a stretch for me personally to say that he's the god of sailors. He's not. He's the god of Jason.
Yes, Jason just wanted him. That was it.
Right, exactly.
That's interesting. Yeah, because I'm just looking at this kind of like this one was interesting. Well, I didn't know this. The mother of Asclepius, meaning was Cronus, and it was Cro-maiden. That was kind of like, when I read that, I kept thinking, how did we get Native American in here? Because, you know, people, that's how they would talk about their beings, their kachinas, their sacredness, would be Cro-mother or, you know, whatever, and Cro-maiden. And I'm like, okay, Asclepius and the crows. Interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Yeah. So, anything else that you found that really intrigued you with this particular deity?
Yeah. You know, in some of the reading I did around his kids, there's also some fostering stories. Like he, you know, he fostered some educated and demigod type entities. One of the most famous being Chiron, the centaur, right, who is well known as a healer, the wounded healer. And that's one of his foster children. And I just find that really interesting. I don't know that I've ever noticed very much about foster children in other writings. I'm sure it's there. But that just really stood out to me for some reason. Also, I found it, like, there's these people that he had a negative courting relationship with. Like, there's not a lot of what I like about Apollo is there's not a lot of stories of, like, he loved this person, but she didn't like him, so he raped her. Like that, you see that so much in Greek mythology.
Oh,
you don't
yeah.
see that with his stories, but you do see, like, the, one of my favorite, actually, the seer Cassandra. I have a real challenging relationship with Cassandra, not because of her and how she shows up in mythology, but because so many modern practitioners try to put themselves off as Cassandra. Like, I warned you guys about this, but no one would listen to me. I'm just like Cassandra, and I hate that. I really find it distasteful when people try to martyr themselves. Like, I warned you all that this would happen. But for those of you that don't know the story, Apollo courted Cassandra. He was in love with her and wanted to be with her. And just like many of his attempted relationships, he offers them anything. I'll offer you anything if you'll give me your love. It's so weird.
Mm-hmm.
And so she says, okay, I will return your love on one condition. I want you to give me the power to see the future. And he says, okay, done, granted. And then she doesn't give her love to him, which I'm guessing means have sex with him, like quote, 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 right?
Right.
And so he's so pissed off that she double crosses him and takes his gift and then doesn't give her love back to him in return,
mm-hmm.
that he curses her that, yes, you can keep this gift to see the future, but no one will believe your prophecies. And so Cassandra, like, predicted the Trojan War. She predicted all kinds of crazy shit, but no one listens to her because Apollo cursed her, right? And I had forgotten that story, that how he was connected to that story, because I do know, like, Cassandra looms large in my world because I know so many witches and pagans who try to pretend that they are Cassandra and can see the future, but no one believes them. Blah, blah, blah. The other spurned love interest of Apollo was Hestia. And I didn't know that. You know, Hestia is a Titan. She's one of the oldest of the gods, and gave up her seat on Mount Olympus because she was the one Titan Zeus was going to keep around. And both Apollo and Poseidon offered to marry her, and she rejected both of their offers and said she would be forever unmarried. But I didn't know that. I didn't know about that relationship to Hestia, which is, it's always fun to learn new stuff.
Yeah. Well, I knew something of Hestia's background, but obviously I did not know that, you know, Apollo was one of the people that are gods that is courting her. But I think that he's how many, and this is interesting, I have no idea why it came to mind, but how many Apollos did we have of space vessels going out into space that they named Apollo?
Right.
Well, yeah. I thought that kind of, because modern man doesn't just, you know, I mean, they have, you know, there's reasons to honor things, but usually they're much more, you know, involved with either their personal names or their egos or, you know, something of that nature. But, you know, sending things off into space, Apollo 10, Apollo 9.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know if you saw this. I mean, totally not in relation to space or in any way, shape, or form, but there's also a question of him with Hecate. And I feel like, so I have to name this first before I go into what the connection is. Modern witches love to make everything connected to Hecate. And I'm not one of those witches. Like, I'm not a fan of lumping everything together just to make it feel more witchy. But apparently one of his epithets is Hecatos, and both Hecate and Hecatos translate as working from afar, which has to do with prophecy and foresight and all of that kind of energy. But Hecate was considered the gatekeeper, and so Apollo was considered the doorkeeper, where Hecate is connected to the crossroads, Apollo is connected to the streets. And one of the oldest temples for Hecate was found inside Apollo's temple in Miletos. So that is a very interesting correlation there. Plus, if you look at Hecate as being connected to the waning moon and the crescent, the final crescent moon, and Artemis being connected to, the sickle, the other side of that, the waxing moon, the first of the crescent, there is another interesting interplay there with him being the sun.
Right. Right. Well, that's interesting. That really is. Because I know one of the things they talked about was that Apollo not only was the brilliant light, but he also represented the other side, which was dark.
Mm-hmm.
And so it would be like black, the black circle versus the white circle, that he represented both sides of that, which is interesting that you would then bring the other thing up, because that kind of correlates in to why they would say that, why that would be something that would be brought up as part of his many things that he, was part of or did or had, rule over, so to speak. So it would mean, because now Helios, just out of curiosity, that is the sun. That he could be he's a Titan.
Yeah.
Helios is a Greek. One of the Olympians.
No, Helios is not one of the Olympians.
Yeah. Because it would tell Helios. So that's one of the other reasons why they tried to usurp the sun to Apollo.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think,
personally,
from what we're coming up with, his energy didn't want to be the sun. His energy wanted to be all these other creative aspects. So I suspect that's one of the other reasons why it kept kind of sliding off and not being part of what he really did.
Interesting, right? With Helios and Apollo, there are stories where they're conflated. There are stories where Apollo's chariot takes the sun across the sky throughout the day, and it's pulled by swans. But really, Helios was never fully removed from worship. Helios was always the sun. So it's kind of an interesting dynamic. I think that's lost because we can't understand how the ancient culture worked. I don't think we'll ever be able to fully get that. But I wanted to also name some of his things he's connected to, like animals and whatever. So the palm tree, he's connected to the palm tree. Animals sacred to him are wolves and dolphins, deer and swans, and cicadas. I guess that the note here is because there's music with cicadas, I guess. Ravens, hawks, and crows, as well as snakes, mice, and griffins. And that he often was connected to using a hawk as his messenger or turning into a hawk, which shows this sort of weird, now I'm losing the name, Ison, not Hathor.
Horus.
Thank you, Horus, yeah. So there is often a desire to conflate Horus and Apollo, that is, the sun god energy and this hawk energy, which I hadn't realized before either. So that's pretty interesting.
It's interesting because you were talking about animals and different things. Hyacinth, that was one. The hyacinth plant is comes, it's beautiful when it blooms, and it's basically comes from the fact that one of his lovers basically, I've got to get the whole thing here because I had it written down, of course, and I've been running back and forth from all my little papers to figure out where he was in terms of that. All right, Hyacinth. He would be over on this one here. So basically, it was an accident that killed Hyacinth. Or Hyacinthia, and the blood that came from that turned into this blue. It turned into a plant that bloomed blue flowers, which is the hyacinth. So that is considered sacred to him, to Apollo, that is. Yeah. So it was kind of, I was like going, I have one. I never realized, you know, when I got the place I'm living in, the land isn't ours. We rent it from the, obviously, the owners of the property is part of the what we do here. And, you know, but we have to keep it nice. And so the lady that was here before planted a lot of bulbs and things. So I get daffodils and I get gladiolas and, you know, all these irises. Well, I got this little plant and I was looking at it and I'm going, I think that's a hyacinth. And sure enough, I have one that's white and one that's blue. And I'm like, wow. So because I've really never seen them except in drawings or, you know, that kind of a thing. So it was an actual up-close and personal experience. So I know Apollo's hanging out in the backyard.
Nice.
Somewhere.
I'm doing that.
So, yeah. And I did want to mention mythologically that some of the creatures, you know, other than the griffin, is, believe it or not, the phoenix, as well as the centaur. Yeah, and a hippogriff, which, of course, anybody that knows what hippogriffs are from Harry Potter. But I thought that was interesting because, you know, some of them I can see, some of them I look at and I go, well, that sounds interesting. I'll let somebody else figure out how it got there, but it sounded interesting.
Yeah. You know, and I think that part of the challenge with him is that he is a god of colonization, and that is like proudly and clearly spelled out. And I know a lot of modern witches and pagans were not necessarily fans of colonization because we can see the problems in colonization and how you lose indigenous knowledge because of colonization. And so I think that is looking at it with our modern lenses. That's something we have to come to terms with and figure out how to work with in a modern construct where we don't want to be further colonizing, you know? There, you know, but he does, within order and reason and structure, there is harmony and there is a desire for harmony and beauty and joy. And so, you know, that those things don't have to be mutually exclusive. And there's often this, you know, the adjective of something being Apollonian or Dionysian, those are polar opposites, where something Apollonian is very structured and rigid and rules, and something very Dionysian is loose and flowing and no rules, anarchy or whatever. And I don't think that's necessarily true in working with the gods. I think they're much more complex than that. And if we try to make them be too rigid, we're creating the problem, you know?
Right.
But anyway.
But, well, that's, and I think that's very good because he worked out Apollo with the fact that we have twin Artemis that we talked about last week. They both come into certain aspects, but we have to realize that, you know, here you are talking about things that are, you know, structured versus non-structured with another deity, and how the way that the words suddenly become used in our modern culture. We have to realize that these go back to a time, as you say, we cannot go back to when they were doing this, and even farther back when they first came into some kind of indigenous tribe or whatever that decided this was the name they were going to call it, and there they were with this god or goddess. We can't get it because we've gotten too far away from that. And even when we try to, you know, revive it, go back, you know, like we are going to go to the, we're going to go back and live on the land. And so we're doing it with modern precepts that whether we try to get rid of them or not, we will still have them.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's time, my dear. I'm looking at our clock.
That does it. We're at our time. Just a little plug real quick to we will be having an Ask a Witch episode in the coming weeks, so please do write in your questions, and you can do that by going to our website, witchpriestesscauldron.com, and there's a little info box where you can write your question. So do that.
Definitely. Yes, and next week, I believe, I've got to go look at my ever-present little calendar here to determine is that we are doing astral projection.
Ooh,
I know, that's kind of, we're starting a whole new kind of way of doing things, because then we actually have to structure in our Ask a Witch, and we're to do another thing, which we will leave as a mystery right now, but it'll be challenging for us to add that part of a new episode every month or every 6 weeks or however we wind up putting it in. So stay tuned. Next week we will astral project.
That's right. And in the meantime, have a good one and stay safe.
Have a good one. Stay safe. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Witch, The Priestess, and The Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Our podcast airs live every Friday at 6 p.m. Pacific and will be available for download. Questions or comments on this show or ideas for upcoming shows can be sent to our website, and that's at www.witchpriestesscauldron.com. Again, that's witchpriestesscauldron.com. On behalf of Elvira, Phoenix, Alan, and myself, Gwion Raven, a big merry meet and merry part and merry meet again. Blessed be.